Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
You're not even listening to me. Listen, my darling, I'm very glad that you've come, but the thing with comedy is that I'm very good at my job, all right? And the thing with stand-up comedy is it's a bit like sex with your missus. It's just better if you let her get on with it on her own.
Welcome to the latest episode of the Book Club on Football Ramble Presents. I am Jim Campbell.
And I'm Kate Mason.
And today we're joined by the star of TV shows such as Mock the Week and Live at the Apollo, the two-time winner of Best Performer in the Comedian's Choice Awards, and author of Klopp Actually, Imaginary Life with Football's Most Sensible Heartthrob, Laura Lex. Welcome, Laura. How are you doing?
Hello. I'm all right, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm not bad. It's lovely to have you on. Thank you very much. I think you are the first and possibly the only ever person who will appear on the Football Ramble Book Club who actually doesn't really much care for football, and I for one would like to celebrate that.
It's weird, isn't it? On I think it was on New Year's Eve, you know, Charlie Baker does his sports show on TalkSport, I think it is.
Yeah.
And they had me on, and then I said to Tom, my husband, I was like, oh, I've got a radio thing to do at 2 o'clock. And he was like, oh, what are you doing? And I said, oh, I'm on TalkSport. They're doing like a sporting highlights of 2020.
just looked at me like, how are you? Babe, I don't know.
So to give everyone at home some background on why that might happen, near the beginning of the pandemic, Jurgen Klopp had been asked his thoughts on how the government should act in the wake of coronavirus. And his response was to essentially question why anyone would ask a football manager or a celebrity that question instead of an expert in the first place. And around that time, on the 13th of March, Laura tweeted the following. If I ever met Jurgen Klopp, I'd say, OMG, if we ever have a baby, we should call it Clip, just so he'd raise an eyebrow at me and tell me I'm a moron, and I'd be so naked by the time he'd finished doing that. And what followed from that is what we're here to discuss today, which is a physical real-world book. I mean, how does that come about, Laura? How does a book come about from a Twitter thread?
Yeah, weirdly. I mean, so first thing that sort of happened was as the thread gained momentum on Twitter, people started replying. And I think it was like Marion Keyes and Emma Kennedy were sort of replying and going, oh, my God, please write this as a book. and I was sort of like, oh, ha ha, you know what it's like on Twitter. Like something goes viral and then the next day something else goes viral. Mm. And then I guess some book agents and stuff suddenly started following me. And there was, I remember Joe Unwin was so lovely and was like, genuinely, the writing on this is really funny. If you have got a book in you, like, let me know. And then I sort of like, I don't know, the pandemic kicked in and everything got weird. And obviously, you know, behind the scenes, when these things go viral with comedians and stuff, suddenly agents are scrambling to turn it into actual meetings and opportunities. And then, yeah, I think because the thread was so long and it was sort of like a cute idea and there was lots of writing in it, publishers and stuff were sort of saying, actually, would you be interested in writing a book? Like, could you do this? So I picked an agent out of all the agents I'd spoken to, lovely Diana, and then she sort of spoke to publishers. And then we ended up in meetings sort of all over Zoom, obviously, because this was back in April when everything was properly shut. Ended up in sort of meetings with lots of publishers, with them saying like, what kind of book would you envisage as being? And some people wanted a novel and some people wanted like a comic strip, and sort of slowly talking to different people and finding a place where I could write the sort of book that I felt the idea would best translate into. And then then I just started to write it.
It's kind of a lovely place to live in your mind, Laura, in your wild.
Is it?
I mean, there's some more lovely than others. I mean, there's a lot of sex in there, obviously, and there are a lot of, you're addressing a lot of your insecurities, I guess, and about how you might make them better if Jurgen Klopp were in your life. Now, clearly, this is not the premise by which you live your life, but was it in some ways a bit comforting to be delving into this whole fantasy land in the midst of what has been, for so many people, a bit of a crap year and quite a stressful one?
Yeah, I think so. I think when it was all signed and it was like, this is going to be your book, and then it suddenly occurred to me that whatever I write now, this is going to follow me around for the rest of my career. This book will be something I've done. And I wanted to make it a bit more than smart and a bit more than like some sort of cheap, gifty book kind of idea. Not that I'm knocking those, you know, they're funny, but it wasn't quite what I wanted to have in my brand, you know, for what I do. So I kind of, and as I started writing, like, I think that was the thing about the thread, was that it was about this person with anxiety, me, and it was all these like little sweet needy things. Like, obviously the smut and the euphemisms are a big part of it, but then the neediness and the reality of being somebody that needs constant reassurance and like propping up, that was another part of it that I think people tapped into. So I wanted to sort of have an element of that in the book. And obviously, like, in my stand-up, I've dealt with the fact that I have anxiety and depression quite a lot. And I kind of wanted to be able to write a book that covered that without writing a self-help book, you know? Like, I didn't want to write a book like, so you're miserable, here's how to be better. But it has got that sort of feel to it, but without doing it as directly, I think.
Yeah, I think one of the things that is is quite surprising about the book, I suppose, is because obviously the premise is that, you know, it's an imagined diary of your life with Jurgen Klopp and all the fun things you'd get up to. And as you discussed, the sort of the kind of rock he would be for you and how he would prop you up, is that obviously the character of Klipp, the daughter you have with Jurgen, who's been present from the very first tweet in this thread as it unfolded, your relationship with her is actually really sweet. And there is a lot of exploration of anxiety and self-doubt. And for a book with such a kind of funny premise, it does grow into something that's quite touching, and that unfolds over the book. And is that something that you'd always planned to do, or did that kind of develop within the process of writing it?
I'd say that more developed as I was writing it, because the first thing I had to do was check how far I could stretch this joke without breaking it, you know? Yeah. Like, it's all very well a thread going viral, but tweets are 140 characters long and nobody's got to buy them. So the first thing I was trying to do was go, oh, okay, how do I make this into a long enough thing to be a product without it just being so repetitive and boring? So I started out writing like more ideas in the short form, and then was sort of like, okay, well, how can I write longer chapters? Like, what will they look like? And I think one of the first ones I wrote was Klipp's birthday party. And then the more I sort of started exploring this, and I had to sort of answer questions with my producer, which was like, so in this imaginary marriage, has Jurgen moved in with you in your current life? Like, is he living in a tiny flat with no money? Or have you joined the sort of like middle class elite, you know, the suburban housewives brigade? And I sort of wanted to, I kind of thought, like, how can I cover as many of my different anxieties as I can? And it felt like wrapping in being nervous about being as good as other parents and you know, worrying about looking after things properly, all of that could be absorbed just as well with this constant rock character just turning up and going, hey, you know this, calm down and think it through.
Yeah.
I think the bit where I fell in love with your version of Jurgen Klopp, Laura, was probably page 80, and you're hosting a barbecue. So I guess, yeah, you've got a garden and it's all quite, I might actually just read it. Your mother says, your query fictional mother, we'll get onto that. you're very sweet to help Laura. So Jurgen is like clearing up the dishes and stuff and picking things up from where people have been eating. Anyway, she says, well, you're very sweet to help Laura, my mother mutters, not enjoying the exchange. I'm not helping her. That's Jurgen. Helping her would be to imply it is her job and I am assisting. We are just doing it together. My mother is silent. I think you've summoned up quite a lot of family experiences in that one moment. Yeah. And it's not entirely improbable that Jurgen Klopp would be the man to solve all those things, now I come to think about it.
Did you see that video of him talking about loading the dishwasher during lockdown?
I thought that was a spitting image thing. No.
No, honestly, seek that one out. I'm not being a pervert here, but seek that one out. He has a whole bit about how he's learned to stack the dishwasher, and I do feel like he filmed that for me.
Yeah, I mean, are you concerned, Laura, that there's a danger that you've idealised him so much that his actual wife will read it and just be like, what? Why can't you be more like this?
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? She's either going to read it and be like, yeah, baby, married to the greatest man on earth, or read it and be like, listen, bitch, if only you knew. If only you knew the reality of how him having 11 other wives who all play football before me.
I think, yeah, that's the really tempting thing to ask, obviously, and I'm sure people have been asking you this constantly. It's like, do you know if he's aware of it? I mean, the book's been out for a little while now, and it is such a unique premise that you would think it might have crossed his path at some point.
Yes, I know that he knows about it because somebody on the Liverpool staff told him about it and got in touch with me and said that he'd said it sounded funny. So I have sent a book, but I don't actually know if they've ever given it to him. But so that's as far as I got with that. But I already feel like a total weirdo for having written it in the I felt like a bit of a weirdo when I did the thread, and then it was a book and I felt like a mega weirdo. And now I feel like if I try really hard to get him to read it somehow, I've like crossed a line into complete weirdo.
Yeah, these things happen, don't they? I mean, 50 Shades of Grey started off as Twilight fan fiction, didn't it? So, I mean, this could start a trend.
Yeah, but Jim, I've got to tell you, Twilight's not actually, it's not actually real.
Right. Okay, I don't think 50 Shades of Grey is, and I don't think Laura's married to Jürgen Klopp. So
no, it's not really real either. It's just a game, guys, so don't worry about it.
Okay, okay. Steady on. Yeah. Steady on that,
Laura. We need that, Laura. Come on.
And break football. We've managed to hold on to these jobs for the whole of this pandemic. What are you trying to do to us? Jim was mentioning all these people who, and you said as well about all these people getting in touch with you on Twitter and everyone being lovely and just wanting to be your best friend, basically, because you were so funny and the ideal life that you were creating was just chiming with so many people, like with that example of the barbecue. There was not 100% praise, because Piers Morgan said you were sexist. What did you make of that, for starters? And I mean, because obviously you are I guess, objectifying Jürgen Klopp here.
Well, this is where I disagree with you, because to objectify means to make somebody into an object. And I would argue that my treatment of the fictionalized Klopp, or the real Klopp, however you want to read it, is always about his behavior. There's very little by way of description of him as a physical object or making him behave like an automaton, which I think is where people get annoyed at fiction that sexualizes people or is sexualized, is that you remove agency from the character and turn them into a sexual item, which I don't feel like I'm guilty of. Like, I'd be happy to have that discussion if somebody really felt strongly that I had done that. I'd be like, oh, okay, tell me how and I'll learn from that. But I didn't feel like I was doing that, and I still don't, having looked back over it.
That's so interesting. Really good way of putting it.
So a Piers Morgan pylon can't be a fun thing, Laura. And obviously that was happening alongside the kind of initial joy of the thread kind of going viral as well. So that must have been a confusing thing to balance. What was it like being on the receiving end of that?
To be honest, not many people joined in his pile. there was the odd person being like, oh yeah, imagine if the roles were reversed, like if somebody wrote this about a woman. And you just think, like, I don't have the time and mental energy to explain to you that women are never annoyed at being thought of as intelligent and charming and pleasant. They're annoyed when their bosoms are described as heaving and their, you know, bum like jelly. And, you know, that's what we get annoyed at, is constantly being these stereotypes. If somebody wants to write a book about me where they talk about what a brilliant person to be around I am, you go ahead, babe, and I promise not to cry sexism.
Heaving is a weird old concept, isn't it?
It is, isn't it? Like, women breathe different to men.
Because they can't go to the shop without flaunting things. It's just so difficult, isn't it? I find it difficult when I'm going to Tesco and, like, I just have to remember not to flaunt. It's hard.
Right? It's so hard, isn't it, not to squeeze yourself into your coat, pour your curves into your jeans and go and buy some orange juice. But, like, that's the thing. Like, I felt really, like Jim, you know me, IRL in the meat space. I'm a really insecure person, and I'm desperately upset to hurt people ever. So the writing a book or a thread about a real person, I know that had consequences, but that's why I made some of the choices I made. Like, I think the most I ever do in physically describing him is he's got nice eyes or he's tall. Those are about the only things I really say. And in the book, I never use his name through it. It's always my husband or my beloved or my darling or something like that. Like, I think those things were a conscious choice to aim the tone in a certain way so that you knew that this was respectful. So if it does go too far, of course I would unreservedly apologise to Jürgen Klopp, but the intent behind it and the reason people didn't feel like that when they read it initially wasn't an accident. It was careful sort of understanding of tone and use of words.
I think you make that very clear in the introduction and in the acknowledgements as well, that, you know, you're not actually some sort of, misery-style lunatic that is helping on making any of this real. I do have to ask, though. I imagine you've played through the scenario of actually meeting Jürgen Klopp in real life in your head and kind of imagined how it would go. But I also have to ask, have you imagined what would happen if instead you somehow bumped into his wife?
I mean, you'd hope they'd see the funny side, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Of course. You would.
Like if my own husband can cope with what yeah. I've done. My own Spurs supporting husband can live with me still.
Yeah.
I'd just be mortified, I think, because I don't know. Yeah, I really stand by the book. I think it's very funny. But then, yeah, if I was like stood in front of the real person being like, just be less lovely in press conferences then if you know, not to victim blame like you shouldn't. But I just...
victim. I love that. Jürgen Klopp is the victim of my comedy.
So can we talk about the sex then, Laura?
Yes.
So basically every single section pretty much ends with you like shagging in increasingly creative euphemisms. Some examples: you order a takeaway, in the meantime he finds a way to satiate my other appetites. He brings up economic inequity. I'm overwhelmed with a desire to turn out all the lights, I guess to save money amongst other things. How did you work on creating all of these? Because they're very funny, but there's a lot of them. It's a lot of variety. you've had to build into this conceit.
Yeah, well, it helped that I was like in that manic stage of the first lockdown at the time. You know, that bit where we were all like, must make content. It was all written through April and May and then into June, I think. No, yes, I think my deadline was middle of June. So I was riding that adrenaline wave of having lost everything and just needing to do this or we couldn't pay the rent. But also there was that, like, it's a formula, I suppose. Like, my brain is very attuned to writing jokes because that's all I do for a living. So it was like football plus domesticity plus euphemism equals joke. So it was sort of a case. There were so many days where I was sitting around the house Googling top 10 commentator cliches and then making a list of them and working out which ones I could make sexy, and then going in to see Tom and going, Tom, what is a free kick and what is a penalty, and then trying to work out how I could use, like, he's playing lightly on the edge of the box, you know, all that sort of stuff. Like, we watched a football match so that I could be like, right, okay, is there anything here? And then that's how I found out what VAR was. I was like, right, that's going in the book. So it was sort of that kind of thing. And then there were just so many days where I was, you know, once that lockdown just got so monotonous and kind of going round and just thinking, like, what am I sick of doing in the house? What am I stuck on? What do I get nervous of? And then, you know, like looking at that scenario and pulling all the puns out of that.
It's great. It's very
a highlight of mine. A highlight of mine, if I may just dive in with it, is when you're discussing, because I think Kate's chosen some almost chaste examples there.
I've chosen some chaste examples, yeah. I don't know what to read into that, actually. My apologies.
My highlight
do the naughty ones.
Well, one of them is simply, he leads me into the kitchen, but a sandwich is not the first thing I put inside me. Even that is relatively tame compared to the bit where you're speaking about your husband making meal plans. And you say, as my eyes scan the color-coded day planner, complete with cooking times and calorie content, my stomach is not the only empty growler.
Yeah. That
were you,
made
were
my
you particularly proud of
so
that
many.
One?
I was, because I think there was a different one. I think I changed it. I remember editing that one. It was something else. And then that made me laugh. And I sent it to my lovely editor, Kate. And she was sending back so many exclamation marks and just, oh, no, we can't. Oh, and then she'd go, actually, there's one where I think the punchline was, I am the best candidate for rock solid dick. And she was like, I don't know if this is a bit much, Laura. And I was like, yeah, it's the most outspoken one, but it did make me laugh. My favourite one is in the barbecue one that Kate mentioned when he has stood in a raincoat and shorts beneath an umbrella, stoking the barbecue to life with mesmerizing efficiency. It's the perfect merge of our two cultures. I find I am marinating more than just the legs of a chicken. That one I like for its subtlety, piquant texture.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
This week at Sukarnov.
Me and Luke have been whiling away the lockdown with our usual nonsense on the Luke and Pete Show. Here's a quick taste of the kind of challenges we've been setting for ourselves.
Give us any nation and I'll tell you why they're dirty.
All right, I'll do it now.
Italy. Yeah. It looks like a sexy boot.
There's also a brand new episode of On the Continent, your weekly guide to the sublime and frequently ridiculous in European football. Find it over on Football Ramble Presents every Thursday.
Neymar's responded to this in kind that they forgot to tell you how to win titles. Then Alvaro has responded with a picture of Pelé with three World Cups going in the eternal shadow of the king.
This reminds me of Stormzy and Wiley. The spots that they have.
All that and a whole lot more at Sukarnov.
Kate sort of touched on it earlier. It's something I'm interested in as well. You talk about your mum quite a lot in the book, and it's obviously difficult to know whether that is a fictionalized version of your mum or a completely made up version of your mum. Sort of how kind of because obviously your mum's going to be reading that as well. So how did you kind of balance that?
Do you know what? That's really funny because when I handed it all in, my mum had to sign a waiver to say she wouldn't sue off the back of the book. And I was there going like, what? But Klopp doesn't have to sign one of those.
Yeah.
And they were like, yeah, because of, I don't know, something about if you're famous, you've given up a right to privacy or something. But if you're like a blah, blah, blah. And I had to go to my mum and be like, mum, I've written like a generic mum and daughter friction thing. Can you read it and check you don't hate me? And obviously she signed it. She's fine with it. But I think that's what I like about it is like me and my mum, we're not the sort of like my mum's my best friend kind of mother-daughter relationship, but we're all right. Like she's my mum. Mm. She drives me nuts. I drive her nuts. But what I quite like is that she reads it and sees her mum in it and doesn't see herself because she's not her mum. So like it's a totally, totally exaggerated version. Like that was the daft thing when they were like, your mum's got to sign a thing to say that this is all based on fiction. And I actually had to write an email back to my publisher and be like, of course it's based on fiction. I'm not married to Jurgen Klopp and I don't have any children, let alone a child called Clip that I've had with Jurgen Klopp that my mum can get mad at me about. So, yeah, so it's sort of like an amalgamation, I suppose, of all of those insecurities that you get with those relationships where you're clashing with an adult that used to be sort of superior to you in terms of what's it called, like hierarchy.
That's really interesting. So it must have gone through your head. Like, I guess like if you're writing about any real person that you have to do this, right? But there must have been a moment where it's like, oh God, have I made my mum sound that bad that you think she might sue me?
Well, she's quite used to it from my stand-up because that's what you do with comedy, isn't it? You take a real annoyance and then you blow it all out of all proportion to really squeeze all the jokes out of it. So mum's... Oh, shut up, Siri. Don't judge me. My mum's quite used to it from my gigging. But I think to me, because of spending so long writing the book, like I don't really see it as being me in the book. It's obviously based on me quite a lot. But because I've spent so much time with these characters and I pictured their house and I, you know, the Klopp in my head is a bit removed from the real Klopp now because I've spent so long fine-tooth combing these characters out to make them work for myself. So, yeah, I don't see it as my mum at all. I mean, so she is a nightmare, but she's just not this nightmare.
So you watched a bit of football and how extensive is your Klopp research, would you say?
He's German.
Got it.
He is.
No, I did do some. He was at Dortmund, I think.
Very good.
And he was a player. And in Germany, the leagues are numbered the other way, I think, which is very confusing. Because there is a quote that he has somewhere where he says, I had a fourth division mind and first division legs or something like that. I don't know. Which is why he is a better manager than he ever was a player.
Mm. There are actually some YouTube. There are some YouTube compilations of him scoring goals. I mean, I don't think he got that many, but it just looks weird. He looks a bit like one of the villains from Die Hard, doesn't he? Like not Hans Gruber, but one of the other ones, sort of the generic.
He reminds me of Two-Face from the Batman films. Who's the plays that guy?
Aaron Eckhart.
Yeah, he's got that look about him. For me, like, in all honesty, once I got to the point of writing the book was not really about him anymore. The book was about this idealized way to deal with your own anxieties. And like one of the ways we talked about doing the book was, if it was illustrated, was Klopp being this little like fairy godmother type character. So, you know, there'd be an illustration of Laura in her room trying to get ready, and then Klopp would be sort of this tiny little fairy sitting on the top of the wardrobe going, hey, it'll all be okay for these reasons. So like that's much more how I saw it in my head, was like how would I fix this anxiety? Or like, what do I wish I remembered when I was in that panicky, like, ugh, or when I'm feeling absolute paranoia because somebody's read my WhatsApp message and not replied? What do I wish I knew in my head? And he sort of just became a mechanism for like leaving myself notes on how to stay sane, more than it was like this actual real man.
Mm. I guess in a way, you got to be careful that you don't let the real Jürgen Klopp get in the way of the story that you're trying to tell, I suppose. You don't need to be sort of going off on about the Gegenpress and other sort of tactical things that he's known for, because it's just it becomes sort of noise, doesn't it? And weirdly, football is irrelevant to this story.
Yeah, I wanted the book to just be absolutely perfect if you've never seen a football game in your life. And I think there's probably only about two jokes in there that you need to know anything about football to get. But I don't know anything about football, and I didn't want to write a book that I wouldn't enjoy. And I didn't want the Laura in the book to know anything about football either. So she's just as clueless as I am. Like, oh, he's gone to work. Bloop, bloop, bloop. She might as well be married to a headmaster at a local school for all she has any solid understanding of what he does.
I would say as well, even, you know, but reading it as a football fan, it still works. You know, if anyone's listening at home thinking, what the hell? She's not talking about Liverpool winning the title. It doesn't matter. You're still going to enjoy it, I promise you.
It does come up, I promise. I put it in there just for the Liverpool fans.
Yeah.
So, this has obviously been a brilliant thing for you, and one of those kind of surprising, unexpectedly lovely stories that has come out of the bizarre pandemic situation that we find ourselves in. And you mentioned towards the end of the book in the acknowledgements that you're now working on a novel, which is brilliant. So how do you feel about that? Is that something that you've always wanted to do, or did it come out of this? And did you think, yeah, I'll do a novel as well? This has been a really exciting thing. How did that sort of come about?
That was all part of the negotiations. That bit is probably the thing that has given me like the biggest glow internally from this, was that when I got offered the deal to write Klopp, actually, it came with the second book. They were like, you are quite clearly a writer. You've clearly got all this, like, that. I think we'd sent them over some stuff of bits that I've written, and they'd looked at my stand-up shows, and they were like, you are the sort of author we want. And the publisher that I signed with, Two Roads, who are a division of Hachette, they only produce, I think, 6 books a year. And they like to sort of work small and neat and detailed. And to have them look at a bunch of tweets and go, yeah, we trust you to write 2 books and one of them's a novel. And the novel just had complete free reign. They just said, what do you want to write? And I started telling them about this TV show idea that I've written and gets optioned every now and again, but never goes anywhere. And I was telling them all about the plot for that. And they just went, sounds brilliant. Do you want to write it as a novel? And that blew my mind, really, that you have that much faith in me, or be able to see that from tweeting and writing and looking at bits and pieces. That is just been one of my favorite things that's ever happened, because I just, I've always wanted to write novels and just have somebody, I don't know, like, I love my stand-up career and I'll never stop doing stand-up. I love it, but I get a lot of reviews and things like that that are like, she's so cheerful, her personality is, you know, this and that, and she's so upbeat and fun and sweet. And I think I am, but I'm a really good writer underneath that, and it quite often gets lost in the wash when I get valued, if that makes sense. So it's been really nice to have that affirmation of someone going, no, we can see that it isn't an accident, all this stuff you're doing, that's your writing.
If it's any consolation to you, Laura, from an outside perspective, that cheerfulness is an enjoyable thing to witness when it means a heckler thinks they're going to have an easy time. Because you do occasionally go viral for destroying them, don't you? So,
yeah. Don't mess with me. Just don't argue with me. I'm very good at what I do. Don't test me. If I can write 58 puns for domestic sex via football in 6 weeks, then I can think of a put down for a drunk idiot on a Saturday night.
That is fast. 6 weeks. I hadn't picked up on the mass of that. That's so exciting to hear about your novel, Laura. Do you think that do you think that this has come from your kind of observational comedy background as well, the fact that you're able to pick out the kind of sensitivity to people and place, because obviously a lot of the things we've been talking about for this podcast have been around the humor, and it is largely a humorous book with lots of laugh out loud, if that's not a terrible cliche, which it is, moments and turns of phrase that really like tickle you. But there's also, I don't know, like you mentioned about your anxiety, there's a lovely bit I enjoyed in about halfway through where you say, "I descend in a mist of that distinctive sadness that comes from being able to touch objects from the past, but not the past itself." And that's sort of a really beautiful line, I thought, which, because that's actually, I think that's a bit earlier on in the book than I remembered. And it slightly takes you by surprise, the kind of emotional range that you've managed to cram into this book.
Ah, thank you. Yeah, I think stand-up is an amazing testing ground. It was one of the things that I found really difficult going from being a stand-up to writing a book, was I couldn't get instant feedback all the time. And when you do stand-up, you write a bit, you go and say it out loud, you see what works, you see what doesn't, you get applause or no applause, you edit it, you take it back, and it's a bit better. And with a book, you can't do that. You just write and write and write, and then you put it out, and then you hope that people like it, because it's too late if they don't. So that's really hard. But I think, like, being a stand-up's massively influenced it. I mean, my novel is going to be about a women's netball team. And the entire idea for that came out of doing stand-up about netball and seeing this reaction that it gets from women and people that had to play it at school. And they just go, "Oh my God, netball." And you go, "Yeah, what is netball? It's ludicrous. Why aren't we taught a game where we could earn a living or go to the pub and watch it, or, you know, all this stuff? But no, we're taught this ridiculous game." And so I started doing some stand-up about that. And then I sort of thought, like, actually, this is getting such a reaction from people. Why is nobody talking about this more? And then it progressed into being in my head, like, this, like, group of women coming together to play netball. And now it's going to be a book. And that's all come out of bringing it up randomly, I think, at a gig at G Live in Guildford.
Oh,
there was a
G-Live
netball team there on a social. And I was, like you say, I was emceeing, and one of them chipped in, and I went, "What are you people out for? Netball?" And I started improvising about all the different rules of netball. And every single person that had learned netball at school just lost it in that room. And I thought, "Oh, there's something in this." But you find out that so immediately when you're a stand-up, you see what there's an appetite for. So it's really helpful.
So you potentially are a thwarted football fan. You just were sent down the
netball route. Yeah, maybe. I just got stuck playing netball. So that is one of the things that I think is a huge injustice. And I know it's changing now that they do teach more girls and more people to play football. But, like, at school, we weren't allowed to learn it. And so you don't develop a passion for something if you're told it's not for you and you're never shown it. And then you grow up and the games that I learned are not really televised, are not things that the mass populace is there for. But I don't know how to manufacture that passion in myself for the thing that's most easily accessible and has the biggest community. And it could just be so easily fixed by just teach everybody football. Football is an incredibly simple idea. There's, you know, women can play it just as well as men. You don't need much equipment. Like netball, you have to have two hoops and all those lines on the floor to be able to play it at all. Like football, just, you know, you can set up two jumpers to make a goalpost and kick something about, and you can play some sort of version of it. It's so accessible. It's brilliant. Just
exactly
teach it to everybody.
Yeah. And you can be, it doesn't matter your size or your skill, you know, you can be a massive centre back, you can be a little mini Messi and have loads of skill. You're absolutely, preaching to the choir here. Although I should probably point out that you can watch netball on TV these days.
It's growing. It's really growing, but it's fascinating how much it's growing. And also, like, casual playing, the like leagues for amateurs, that is growing massively as well, which is why it was so frustrating every time I pitched this TV show about a women's netball team to be told, "I don't know if there's a market for it." You go, "There is!" Every single person
in G Live.
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree about the football, though. I mean, I desperately tried to, as I'm sure I told Jim and everyone loads before, I desperately tried to play in the boys' team when I was little, but I was not good enough straight away to, you know, get past to. Like, if I'd been Megan Rapinoe or whoever, then it would have probably been a different story. But I probably, my enthusiasm for the game actually comes from feeling like shut out of it. And then suddenly, as I got slightly older, realizing that I could just, you know, I could follow it and I didn't need to fight all these people in order to be a part of it. So it's really interesting that there's a reflection on your life as well in a different way, given that you're writing this book that's, I mean, not really about football, but it's about football culture. It really is. And that's pretty much all we ever talk about on the Football Ramble, isn't it, Jim?
Indeed. Yeah, unless something ridiculous happens, which is football related, which is obviously about five times a day. Because if you give enough teenagers enough money, stupid stuff happens. Thank you for coming on, Laura. It's been a joy to both discuss Klopp actually with you, and also to read it. And if anybody likes the sound of it, as I've said already, I heartily recommend reading it. You can get it from all of the usual places. Kate, is it Hive, the website you generally recommend?
I do like it. Hive.co.uk. Yeah, they give you some. It's a bit like Amazon in the sense that you can, you know, get your stuff, and it's easy. But they give money to one of your local bookshops. You just nominate it.
Yeah, so that's nice, there. Isn't it, as well? So if you want to check out Klopp, actually, that's probably a nice way to do it. Laura, is there anywhere you'd like to direct people to, if they, you know, so they can see more of your stuff or whatnot?
If you go to my website, which is lauralex.co.uk, it's got my tour shows are going online. I will be doing my tour shows all from my house, and you can watch them around the country on the internet. Or if you want to buy signed copies of Klopp, actually, I sell them for £10 on my website if you want to get them direct from me.
Wow, will you be doing your stand-up better, shows from this very podcasting venue?
Yes. I've now...
Using this exact mic.
My tour was supposed to finish last April and it hasn't started yet. So we're giving up trying to actually tour, and I'm just going to do it from my house into a webcam and people can watch it online. It's the future.
That's nice. Are you going to do specified regional material based on where you would be?
Hey, Oxford! Oh, I went to X Pub today.
So, Laura, thanks again for coming on to chat to us about Klopp, actually. It was a pleasure to read it, and also it's been a pleasure to sort of get some insight into how it happened. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me. Thank you. I'm very delighted to have been on a football podcast.
I think
you've nailed
you can
it.
Really carry it off. I love the fact that you actually did deliver like a speech about why everyone should be allowed to play football.
Yeah.
Tony Redknapp didn't do that.
It was rousing. It's great. Maybe you've converted yourself, if anything, which is
I know
perfect.
Jamie Redknapp. He was married to the one from Eternal.
Yes. There we go.
That's true. Yeah, he was the one. In fact, he was the last episode, Laura.
Was he? So, congrats to him for being my warm-up act.
Okay, so thanks everybody for listening. Thank you, Laura, for coming on. Thanks, Kate, of course, for being an excellent co-host as ever. Thank you guys for listening, and buy Laura's book, frankly. We'll see you soon.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over 3 glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around the duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.